podcast. Chris Graham and my long-lost friend Rod Mullins. It's been all my fault, Rod. I've been traveling the world trying to watch basketball, and we as a result, you had Bristol a couple weeks ago, and we got to catch up on Bristol. We'll catch up on Richmond here, talking some NASCAR, and we'll talk about the Easter break holiday coming up. First, Rod, so it's been a couple of weeks, but Bristol, you had the weekend to just I'm sure be in NASCAR heaven. Final thoughts on Bristol from a couple weeks ago and your coverage of that big weekend of racing.
Well, Bristol was probably some of the best racing I have seen this year. I saw it up close and personal on the short track on the world's fastest half mile. I think the thing that probably disappointed me the most was the lack of a crowd. And that kind of surprised a lot of people. I know that there's been a lot of people in the local media down here that have been talking about, you know, the stands just did not look good. And if people think back and saw the telecast on Fox and was able to watch the coverage, they noticed that the turns at turns 1 and 2 and then turns 3 and 4, they completely they closed it off. They did not allow any ticket sales whatsoever for people to sit up there in the stand in hopes of getting everybody to kind of squeeze together on the front stretch and the back stretch, kind of improve the audience, so to speak, for the cameras. And I can understand them doing that. But the problem is we're still back in the same scenario that we have been for several years. A lot of uncertainty. There were people that were uncertain about the weather. There were people that were just not too sure about going to this race because they still haven't gotten over the change in the track that changed it from what was a three and four group track to a little bit less than that, which I think it's improved back again. So for me, I thought Bristol was an experience this time around. I saw some great racing in the Xfinity Series race on Saturday. I saw Kyle Busch, who got absolutely pile-driven in the rear end of his car on the third lap, and did still manage to come back and outrace his brother Kurt to win the Busch City 500. And so, you know, I really can't say anything bad about the racing. It was exactly what I thought it would be, a good aero package. I think it adapted well for the track. I was just disappointed by the lack of fans. And I think the big talk now is people are hoping that that will change, not this year, but next year, of course, when it becomes a playoff race and they move it to September.
Any interesting stories from behind the scenes? That's one of the great things about covering a race in person. I know my own experience covering the Final Four. I've got a lot of stories. I've been telling about that for the last couple weeks now, the last week and this week. So any good stories from Bristol from behind the scenes there, media center and otherwise?
I think probably the big story was Darrell Walter's sudden retirement, or at least the retirement after 19 seasons with Fox Sports. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that has kind of come on in response to an article that was published by a writer, a motorsports writer with the Associated Press, kind of questioning whether or not Darrell Walter needs to be involved in the sport. Because I think the big question has been with a lot of people, DW is too old, or at least that's what they're saying. He comes from a different era. You've got young people now that don't understand what he's talking about. But DW, to me, more than anything else, and I used to be an anti-Darrell Walter fan at one point, leading up to last year, until I got a chance to meet the man and understand a little bit about who he was. And I think he has changed over the years from the time that he was called Jaws by people in the fifth and the media, because he never knew when to stop running his mouth, and that was just the way DW was. And also the times of hitting people out on the track, like Richard Petty and the stories that he's told about that. But DW still is, to me, I think, one of those voices. He's at least, as I look at it, the kind of down-home voice of what NASCAR was all about years ago, but also kind of bridges that gap for some of the older fans that are out there, and then some of these younger fans need somebody for, I guess, some guidance, some leadership, so to speak. And kind of that way, when you look at basketball coverage and like the NCAA and basketball coverage, I'm not very fond of Bill Rafke all that much. Sometimes I feel like he drops things in at a time where it doesn't really belong, and then you've got Jim Nance, who's supposed to be the professional out of it, and then you've got the middle guy right there who's kind of bridging the two worlds of both of these guys as the announcer. That's kind of what DW has fell into, especially in the Fox Sports booth, especially with Jeff Gordon now, the younger generation of driver, but still an established driver. And then you have Mike Joy from the old days. DW was kind of that little gap. And I think it was very disappointing, depressing to see DW's face there around the track, especially at Bristol. A lot of fans were happy to see him. But at the same time, it's like saying goodbye to somebody. And it's almost like somebody has written his epitaph, so to speak, and has already erected the headstone ready to put him out to pasture. And I think it's really wrong of them to really treat DW the way that they have. But, you know, that's the way some people are. And I guess when some people in the media, that, you know, they felt like they've been done wrong or they've been treated bad, or at least they've got to find something to point a finger at, so to speak, about the sport. DW was the one that they pointed to. And I think that he's not the only problem with NASCAR. And I think that there were a lot of misconceptions about that this weekend.
Yeah, I feel the same way. You mentioned Bill Raftery. I'll use another basketball announcer, Dick Vitale. Dick Vitale has long since not been an X's and O's guy. Darrell Waltrip is not a guy that's going to give you the, you know, really concrete thoughts on engineering and that kind of thing in a NASCAR race. But they're entertaining. They know a lot about the sport. They know the history of the sport, and they're entertaining, and that's their job. I'm a color commentator on baseball broadcast, ESPN3 baseball broadcast, way down the ladder from certainly where those two guys are. But your job is to be entertaining, and man, Waltrip is entertaining, and yeah, I hate to see that too. So that is sad news. Well, let's go to Richmond now. Okay, so we're catching up. We're still catching up, and we're here in Virginia, Richmond. They had the race on this weekend. Martin Truex gets his first win in 80 races, his first short track victory, and take us into the give us a rundown of Richmond and the goings on in the Commonwealth this past weekend.
Well, I think more than anything, there were people that were expecting Joey Logano to really make a run at this race, and they thought that the team, Vince's team, was going to really show up and do well. But Martin Truex has said over and over, if I have the car, if you give me the car, I'll get there sooner or later. If I had just a couple more laps, well, this time he had plenty of laps in order to be able to clinch this victory, and he needed this victory. And I've been rough on Martin Truex Jr., especially on some things that I have talked to of other people talking about racing. I think I've also mentioned, too, that he needs to kind of just, in one way, shut up, go out and do the job and do what he needs to do. And this past weekend, or especially at Richmond, he went out and he did that job. And Joe Gibbs Racing has been, they've been trying to, I guess, fit in. They produced the cars. Cole Pern and his team from the old Furniture Road team and everything that now switched over to the auto insurers and also the Bass Pro Shop at Toyota. It's taken them a while to try to get used to the way that things are run in the Joe Gibbs Racing camp. And I think this was one of those things that where it just pushed Truex over the top, and I think that they had some good pit stops, a really good setup car this past week. And again, I'm going back to that aero package. I think that aero package this time around really made a big difference for Mark Truex and a lot of the other teams at Richmond. But Joey Logano wasn't too happy after the race. He felt like that they should have been there. They were contended all night. He was upset over some things. But, I mean, that's typical short track racing. That's something that he needs to be aware of. And if he's not aware of it by now, surely he's got the point now across. Because when you go to Richmond, it's no hole park. Same thing as it is with Martinsville. Same thing as it is at Bristol. It's one of those things of where if you've got a good car, you go out there and you race and you're going to do well. But you've got to watch for everybody else out there. Take your point. Chase Elliott at Bristol here a couple weeks ago. Chase Elliott was running well, and then power steering goes out of this car. Nobody else to blame. The car just failed on the power steering, but it still managed to be able to put forth, I think, a top 10 or top 15 effort. And so you're talking about that same thing going to Richmond, being able to handle that car and handle it. The big thing that came out of Richmond, though, besides Bristol, I had to mention about Kevin Harvick, and I think that was in one of my articles. Kevin Harvick failed inspection three times before finally passing on the fourth time. And then his crew or car engineer was escorted out of the track. Well, they had more problems this past week at Richmond with teams not passing inspection. Although everything came out in the wash at the end of the race, you had Chase Elliott, you had, I think, William Byron, you had some of the Hendrick cars that did not pass inspection this time around, and they got put to the back of the pack, and I'm sure they're going to be facing some fines out of it, and depending on how many times that, you know, that they went through inspection. It's a much more tedious inspection than what it used to be, and they're going to make sure, one way or another, that somebody is not going to try to cheat, especially in the qualifying rounds and especially before the race, and that's what they're trying to do. And so far, they've been successful, and they've slowed Kevin Harvick down, but Harvick came from the back of the pack, and he made it a race on that Sunday at Bristol. So it can be done. It's just a matter of who's dedicated enough to do it.
Yeah, it's a game of whack-a-mole, if you ask me. It's just, you know, you're not trying if you're not cheating, I guess, to kind of use the old SEC football saying. And so, you know, not to say cheating, that sounds bad, but, you know, you're looking for advantages. And so, yeah, they'll keep doing that. Now, here's this next topic is one that, boy, I'd like to weigh in on a little bit, too, after you give us some reporting on it. Jimmy Johnson runs the Boston Marathon. I've run three marathons, not Boston. I ran New York a couple years ago. But, you know, it's one thing to run the marathon. I mean, you got to rest yourself up a couple days, you know, at least for a couple days, maybe 3 or 4 days before the race and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't have to drive, you know, a few hundred miles before I ran my marathons. Take us into Jimmy Johnson and how crazy he is. He's done this before, not Boston before. He's run marathons before, but this is bonkers, if you ask me. As speaking as a marathon runner, that Jimmy Johnson is able to do this.
Well, it's a testament to Jimmy Johnson's conditioning as a race car driver and also the ability for him to get out there and be able to run the Boston Marathon. I think there were a lot of people scratching their heads and talking about Jimmy Johnson. Why in the world is he doing something like this? Well, of course, one thing is going to be promotional out of it, and then also just getting his name out there. And also, I think it's probably one of those things, too, of where NASCAR probably could use with Jimmy Johnson a little bit of a shot in the arm, especially in the Northeast, especially in a market like Boston. So you have Jimmy Johnson that comes to run the Boston Marathon. They give him the number 4848, so that's kind of significant with his race car. But they put him out there, and he was complete. I mean, he thought he's not absolutely crawling or, you know, coming across the line like ooze coming across the finish line. He looked like he had, you know, done really well. And I think, again, it's testament to the conditioning that some of these drivers go through. And we forget about that from the old times, and especially from, years and years, 40, 50, 60 years ago when they were racing NASCAR, when really all you could do of conditioning was you just better make sure you can get into the car, drive the car, and then when you come up in a situation like that, what you're doing is Richard Petty sucking on a towel, a wet towel, to be able to finish up the race. I think for him, I think it's just a testament. Martin got these drivers started in this conditioning thing, and I think it's a big thing. I think it's just something. It's a great testament to Jimmy Johnson going up there, especially for the Boston Marathon, and then completing it all in his condition, even after racing those 400 laps at Richmond and coming up there on Monday to run the race.
He ran, and I just looked this up, Rod. He finished the marathon in 3 hours, 9 minutes, and 7 seconds. And you hear me kind of chuckling when I say that. My best time, I've run three. My best time is 3 hours, 39 minutes. So his pace was 7:13 per mile. I've run a half marathon in 7:27 per mile. These are good times. I mean, this isn't some guy. You'll hear about celebrities sometimes doing 6-hour marathons, which is pretty much walking. And then I don't want to denigrate. If you can walk 26 miles or kind of, you know, really slowly shuffle 26 miles, there's something to that. But these are serious runner times that Johnson's putting up there. So, I mean, and now I'll put in perspective on this, too. I mean, to do that, you've got to, like you were saying, Rod, about the training. I mean, a marathon training plan is a 19-week training plan. You run so many, you run 40, 50, 60 miles a week, depending on what level of training you're getting into. You've got to do, you don't just do one 26 mile run. You build up starting at 13 miles and then you go from 13 to 15 to 17, et cetera, until you get up to 20, you know, 23 generally is where people stop off. And then they just assume they can run those last three when they get to race day. But this is a dedicated thing that you've got to be able to do. And to get that time, whoa, that's a good time. So yeah, I am mega impressed with Jimmy Johnson. He's able to do this after a race 36 hours before.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing it really gets me too, people fail to realize this about a NASCAR driver, and this is something that, again, 40, 50, 60 years ago, they didn't really think about this on the drivers, but I go back to this whole thing about the, I guess it was Randall Cunningham with the Philadelphia Eagles, that years ago said, there is no such thing as an athlete in NASCAR. He said, they're not even athletes. They don't even qualify to be an athlete. And Jimmy Johnson was one of those that kind of wanted to rub Randall Cunningham's nose into this whole thing and tell him, wait a minute, there's a lot more to this. You're talking about losing if you go into a race car and you drive, say, 500 miles, and especially when the temperature is at least over 100 some degrees, you're going to lose at least 20 pounds of fluid out of your body racing at a track like Talladega or Daytona, especially in the hot heat part of the day. That's a lot of fluid. Now, if you can condition yourself, and of course you're getting fluids and different things like that during the course of the race, I've seen some of these drivers come out that just they look like they've just been to a big mass business report. They come out looking as smooth and suave and debonair as they did when they got into the car at the beginning of it. Then you see some of them that have not been well trained and conditioned through this, and they have to pop them with IVs just to get them through or get them through an interview at the end of it. Jimmy Johnson is a testament to what it takes to be a conditioned athlete when it comes to racing a NASCAR stock car.
Yeah, he's got the skill, and the training goes behind that and enhances the skills. So now let's switch gears. We talked about Jimmy Johnson running the Boston Marathon. Let's go to another bit of off-the-track news, and this is Tony Stewart. And this is what so Jimmy Johnson we know is fit, and we know he runs, and Tony Stewart runs his mouth, and he rips NASCAR. I don't know if there's a better way I can put it. He just rips NASCAR. I don't. There's not like one thing in this interview that we're going to talk about here in a second that he ripped him for. There was about 20 things, it seems like. So take us into this Tony Stewart latest tirade about NASCAR.
I think more than anything else, I'm just going to just flat out leave it simple. Tony's not happy with anything NASCAR is doing right now. He's really big on the whole thing right now about the qualifying thing. And I have to admit, in one sense, he's right. You know, they've done this NASCAR qualifying setup a little bit different from what we're used to. I was always used to the car going out on the track and at least running, you know, your best lap and whatever you got your best lap out of, that's what you were going to qualify with. And then they go to this thing of where they put all the cars out on the track and, you know, the best times and so forth. And then they eliminate you through a couple of rounds, at least three rounds, down to the final one to where they put the top 10 in the list. Well, you know, Tony is complaining about that, and then he's complaining about the fiasco that happened out at Auto Club Speedway out in California, where a lot of these drivers just didn't want to move. They didn't want to get out there, and some of them were like, oh, well, I'm not going to go out here and really push myself and do a lot of things. What it all boils down to is Tony's talking from the perspective, at least from the driver, that's like, I want to just do what I've got to do when I have to do it, and that's all I want to do. That's all he wants to do. Unlike some of the other drivers, and one of his drivers in his own stable, Kevin Harvick, who goes out there and they want to pour it to it, but they've also used the system of how this qualifying has been set up, and it's forced NASCAR have changed some things, and Steve O'Donnell, who is one of the executives with NASCAR, has already said, there's got to be some changes, and this stuff is not fair to the fans, and that's who you're looking at. You're trying to look at the fans in this as to who is going to possibly get to the front of the pack and who's going to dominate. Tony's just blowing a lot of smoke right now, and I think Tony has been extremely quiet here for several years since the death of the young man up in New York. He's tried to stay a little bit low, and they've ran the team exceptionally well. But Tony just kind of flew off, at the top of his head this time, saying some things that maybe NASCAR needs to look at and they need to go in depth on. But again, it's a lot more of just Tony Stewart complaining about, spilt milk, just as far as I'm concerned.
Well, it kind of reminds me of the old saying about how a broken clock is right twice a day. I mean, the more complaints you throw out there, Tony Stewart, eventually you're going to have one where you're going to be right on something. So we'll give him credit for that. But, again, that broken clock's right twice a day, too. So, all right. So let's wrap it up. Easter break, a rare weekend off for NASCAR in a season. And then we get ready for Talladega. So what is this week like for the NASCAR teams? I mean, a chance to kind of lick their wounds a bit, rest up, and then get right back into it.
I think for a lot of these teams, it's a chance for, like you said, lick their wounds a little bit, but also prepare for what's considered to be one of the biggest super speedway races that they're going to have all season. Of course, they've raced Daytona at the beginning of the year, but now you're getting through at least the first third, so to speak, of the racing schedule, and this is going to be the big test for this new aero package on a track. It's completely different than what Daytona is. Even though we're talking a 2.5 mile track, Talladega is a track that is built for speed. And some of these teams, some of the race car drivers are going to be going and enjoying some time with family, which, as the old thing schedule used to be, they used to be off on Easter, they'd be off on Mother's Day, they never raced on Mother's Day. I know that changed in the past and so forth. But, for them, this weekend, there's going to be some reflection. It's going to be a chance for them to look and see what they've got to do to be able to find victory lane. And I think we're going to see some drivers maybe touch victory lane at Talladega that have not had a chance to visit victory lane all season. One of those that everybody seems to be talking about is Daniel Suarez. He's the one that right now that everyone is still talking about, that he's made such an impression going over to Stewart Haas Racing. I think he finished in the top 10 in one recent race. He's been wrecked a couple of times. He's wrecked at Bristol. But he still came out and he wanted to make a charge in all of his races that he has done. And he's done that. And I also am not ruling out Eric Almirola. He's got a chance to maybe pull out a big win because he's been racing really, really well. But one guy that I think of, some of the younger drivers that tend to break, that I think we may be talking about, if he can get a good car underneath him and a good engine out in front to pull him around the track and also get the people together to work with him, is Chris Buescher. And he drives either the Busch Beans car or he drives the conglomerate of some of the other the Kroger product that they have or some of the things that they have for sponsorship. He's been racing really well in the number 37 car for the first part of the season. And I think he's come close. I think he got a top 5, top 8, something like that in one of the recent races. I think he's working on getting a win. It would be a big win for JTG of racing, especially for them, Brad Tuttery's team. So it would be good if they pull out a big victory at Talladega. But it's after the carnage, we don't know what's going to happen. I mean, when the big one happens, we can have somebody, a first-time winner there, or we can have somebody that won the race 4 or 5 times. So we'll just have to see what happens when Talladega rolls around next week.
So wrap up the podcast here. I'll just mention a reason we haven't been able to do as many NASCAR podcasts is, I've been a little busy with basketball, following the UVA basketball team from the first weekend of the NCAA tournament, which was I was in the area of Martinsville on our way down to Columbia, South Carolina for the first two games that first weekend. Then they were back in Virginia for Bristol. When Rod was in Bristol, I was in Minneapolis, and then they were in Richmond this past weekend as UVA fans were celebrating. In fact, Rondé Barber drove the pace car, I believe, for the race on Saturday night. And Rondé Barber, UVA alum, and he said he was giddily obnoxious over the national championship. Ron, you're a UVA sports fan too, so I'll let you be giddily obnoxious as we close out here.
Well, I'll just tell you, I thought I was going to have some heart medicine or some blood pressure medicine because these guys kept me on the edge of my seat almost the entire time, and there were times that I would be watching on TV, I would have to flip it off, and I told my wife, I can't watch this. This is just too much. We've come too far to lose this game. And then Tony Bennett and his crew would suddenly get something back together and then you have almost like a different hero for all of these games that took place through the NCAA tournament. I just can't say enough about what Tony Bennett has done to the UVA basketball program. And, you know, it's trying to set Bronco Mendenhall kind of in a direction now where he's being able to go back to his football team and say, this is what we need to achieve, or this is the way we need to be leaning with our football program. It's kind of, you know, erupted all this kind of excitement in Charlottesville, and I know it's erupted a lot of excitement down here because suddenly I saw a bunch of, well, I'm just going to say it plain and simple, bandwagon jumpers suddenly leave from from the tech support, and then they took off and started supporting UVA, which I think is great. I think it's great to kind of, you know, keep that focus on at least the state team being able to pull something out. But, you know, I think the one thing that I am disappointed with that I've heard, there's some people, I was keeping up on Twitter, I think, the other day, and the talk is that there's some Virginia fans that are very upset now with DeAndre Hunter, with Ty Jerome, and Kyle Guy all declaring for the draft, but why not? You know, I think this is a great opportunity for them, and Kyle Guy kind of puts it in perspective. I'm going to see how I'm going to do and stuff. If it doesn't work out, hey, I've still got another year I can come back and play. And I like that kind of attitude because these guys are talented, and, you know, they've done a pretty job. Tony Bennett has kind of been, you know, endorsing of them to go ahead and do it and so forth, and you know, really, what people hurt. I want to see them be as successful as what it took to win a national championship in Minneapolis here just a week or so ago. It doesn't seem like it was just that long ago. It just seems like it's still, for me, yesterday with the way it feels.
Yeah, my feet still have not touched the ground, which is a good thing. You know, I'll give my perspective as we're wrapping up here. I'll say my perspective on the kids going to the NBA or trying to go to the NBA early. You go to college, get a job. If they're going to get a job, good for them. Let's get them a job. I'm all for that. And you know what? If it took winning a championship, you know, and all this to, for them to get this job, then good. Because that means I'm sitting here right now as we're recording this podcast. I'm wearing a UVA National Basketball Championship hat that I wouldn't be wearing otherwise. So, man, I tell you, yeah, my feet have not hit the ground yet. And I'm not sure they will for a while. So.
Difference, though, I'll tell you this, it makes a difference with these guys who have been so dedicated to the program like they have been, as opposed to, and I won't mention the name of the team, but, you know, from my perspective, from down here close to where I live, and everybody talks about that team to the west in that little L town and not Louisville, but they always talk about the one and done. Well, these guys certainly aren't one and done players. These guys have paid their dues. And I think I'm with you on this. But, you know, they're going to get a job. If they're going to get a job, all power to them on it. I think it's great.
All right. So we caught up on Bristol, Richmond, UVA basketball. We got folks ready for Talladega. I think we did our job, Rod. I want to thank you for joining us, and let's have you on again soon.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it.